and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
4 years ago, presidential hopeful Joe Biden touted a detailed plan to address the climate crisis. As his time in the White House winds down, what promises has he kept? And am I missing something, or have both campaigns been awful quiet about the climate this time? I'm Kai Wright. Join me for a look at where we stand on the climate crisis and what we can expect under a President Harris or President Trump. We take your climate questions live on the next Notes from America. Sunday evening at 6, live on Radio Catskill.
Join us for Radio Catskill's 2024 Community Awards Thursday, honoring individuals dedicated to environmental stewardship and sustainability, including Lori Ramey of the Upper Delaware Council and Lisa Lyons of Morgan Outdoors. Celebrate their hard work and commitment to healthier and more sustainable local communities at the 2024 Radio Catskill Community Awards Thursday evening at La Sagone, Narrowsburg. Get your tickets now at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville. Broadcasting from our studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome to Catskill Character.
I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Livingston Manor, New York resident, Brenda Selden. Brenda is an animal communicator, which she will tell us all about, but first we're going to delve into her very interesting background. In 1889, Jews were escaping the pogroms in Russia and Eastern Europe, and many fled to Argentina, where there was already an established Jewish population. Both of Brenda's parents, Argentinian Jews, came to the U.S. in the late 50s and ended up in Forest Hills, New York, where Brenda grew up, having one foot in each culture, Argentinian and the Jewish American culture in Queens. Another very interesting story, so let's get to it. Welcome to Catskill Character, Brenda.
Hi, Donna. Thanks so much for having me.
You just got back from a 14-day visit to see family in Buenos Aires. How was the trip?
It was really great, even though it was winter there because Argentina's in the southern hemisphere. Still, it's the equivalent of our Catskill spring, so it was very enjoyable.
The translation of Buenos Aires is good airs. What's it like in Buenos Aires?
It's made up of many, many neighborhoods. Imagine, much like our little towns, every neighborhood has its bakery and its butcher and its little shopping places. And it has a very vibrant cafe society. So I spent a lot of my trip just sipping cafes and eating pastries at all the different cute little places that I could find.
It sounds very European.
It is. The architecture is very much influenced by 19th century European architecture. The majority of the population are descendants of European migrants. Oftentimes people going to Buenos Aires and to most cities in Argentina will feel like they are experiencing a slice of European life.
What were some of the things that you'd recommend to do for someone going there?
Well, it's a very culturally vibrant country. There are many museums. I definitely would recommend the Latin American Modern Art Museum. It has an incredible collection of 19th and 20th century Latin artists. I would also take in a tango show. In La Boca, tango is a dance that was created in an area of Buenos Aires known as La Boca. La Boca means the mouth. It's the port area.
Oh, I love tango. I love tango and flamenco. Last week, I had Leah Maidenbaum. I don't know if you know her, but she was a fabulous flamenco dancer from here, but lived in Spain.
Yes, I actually met her many years ago. And the funny thing is that there was another flamenco dancer in our area in Lake Huntington, and she offered classes And so there was a very short period of time where I studied a teeny bit of flamenco dancing. It was wonderful, but she was very, very, very intense. I felt like she was training me to become a flamenco dancer, and I just wanted to exercise and have fun.
So, Brenda, what was it like growing up having one foot in two different cultures?
When I was younger, it was a little more difficult. When you're a first generation with migrant parents, you're trying to find a way of fitting in. So I would say in my younger years, I grew up in Forest Hills, Queens, not in an area that I would say was predominantly Hispanic. But as I grew older, I came to appreciate being part of two such wonderful cultures.
Did you speak Spanish at home just so you could keep it up?
Spanish was my first language, and I often, with my family, visited Argentina during the summers. And as I grew older, just like with any other migrant children, we end up speaking our language and adding English to it. So I spoke Spanglish over time. I kept up my Spanish, and pretty much I'm pretty fluent in it.
Where did you go to high school? What was the name of your high school, and what were you interested in at that age?
So I went to Stuyvesant High School. It's in New York City, in Manhattan. And actually, it's kind of interesting because, as you know, Donna, I'm an animal communicator. I also work intuitively with people and work with energy healing and land blessings. And honestly, we don't live in a culture where somebody like myself could explore that as a young person. So I just went with what I felt would be interesting, or I thought might be my path, but it didn't really spark anything. So it took a while to really find my path.
I believe you studied Japanese comparative lit at Queens College, where you met your husband, Ronnie Selden, who's a pretty interesting guy himself.
So I always loved literature. And at that time, I was very much interested in the Japanese culture. And as part of my coursework, I had to take a one credit class in something. And at that time, my husband, who's no longer with us, he was a shakuhachi grandmaster, meaning that he was licensed in two Japanese lineages. He played this instrument and then blown bamboo flute, and he played what's called honkyoku, which is Zen meditative music. It was music within the Zen Buddhist tradition, and many of the pieces were very old, some almost 1,000 years old.
Wow. He was very well known in that community, correct?
Correct, yes.
Well, you started a master's in Japanese literature at Columbia, which you decided wasn't for you. But something very important happened during that time. You began volunteering at animal rehab centers.
So I wanted to do something that would just spark my joy, because Japanese literature, as much as I loved it, just was not my path. And I ended up volunteering at two different wildlife rehab centers. One was in New Jersey and the other one was on Long Island. And I learned to work primarily with birds and small mammals, such as squirrels. And I loved it. I loved it. And it also sparked my interest in healing. So the best part of it is, I've always said that wildlife rehabbers are one of the few jobs where you get to put something back into nature. Because as human beings, we always seem to be taking, taking, taking.
So explain that a little further.
Well, I would get wildlife. I was licensed to work with them. For instance, baby squirrel that fell out of its nest and was injured, I would work to heal the baby and raise it to the point where it needed to be with other squirrels. I would put that baby with other squirrels. And as they got a little older, the next stage is to get them used to being outside. And because I did this in the middle of Manhattan, I had a range of connections with other wildlife rehabbers that lived in the suburbs or in the countryside. I would take those squirrels to them where they would get them used to being outside, and then they would be released.
Now, did they spray anything on their tails, like a spray paint or whatever, so that if the squirrel came back, you would be able to identify, oh, this is a squirrel that was here already and found us again?
No, that's not done. Something like that may be done with an animal such as maybe that is endangered, or I didn't do that part of it. That would be rehabbers that work with scientists. So maybe to do a study, they might put a tag on a bird or a turtle, but not specifically to see if you would get that animal back.
I see. This just occurred to me. Did you ever have an occasion to work with hummingbirds?
Yes, a few times I received hummingbirds, and because they were not my specialty, I was trying to get them to other rehabbers that would do better by them. But the ones that I received, because they were the victims of what is called window strikes, where birds go fly into windows because those windows are reflecting the sky. So they think they can just fly through it. And imagine these teeny, teeny, tiny birds just hitting a window really forcefully. So in both instances, they died within a few hours. So I didn't have the chance to get them to somebody more appropriate. But the interesting thing about hummingbirds, their heart rates are they have such a high rate of their hearts beating that they have a very high metabolism rate, that they lose weight just even sitting still.
Wow. I didn't know that. So this whole experience led you to want to open your own rehab center. And your husband was very supportive of your work with animals, wasn't he?
He was. He was supportive of anything. He just believed in being a cheerleader to help people achieve their dreams. He didn't think anything was impossible. So when I said, would you mind if I started a wildlife rehab center? We'd have to find a place to rent that would allow it. And he just basically thought it over and said, okay. And well, it took us about 5 months. It took working with many, many different realtors, kept calling them to see, is there a place where they'd allow us to keep wildlife, to put a couple of cages outside. And eventually we found such a place in Murray Hill.
Yeah, that was a very different kind of townhouse, wasn't it?
I was very grateful to the landlord that I was allowed to do that. And the building was definitely filled with characters. My landlord, if anybody remembers the movie, Udana, now I forget the name of it, the Christmas movie, where the little boy is pressing his face against the
door. Home Alone.
No, department store. It was from the 40s, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, waiting for everybody to get in to see Santa Claus into this department store. And it's a very famous movie, and I can't remember the name now. I'm sorry, but my landlord was a child actor in that movie.
He's a child actor who obviously grew up and loved animals, too.
He was an interesting character. He was a combination of he was a little surly, but at the same time, I was very straightforward. This is what I want to do. Can I do it? And he was okay, but he was like, they were all characters in that building.
Well, characters are good. I can testify to that.
Yes.
And absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here. You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. My guest today is animal communicator Brenda Selden. We'll be right back after a few short messages.
Hi. I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Can two people with different political beliefs still have a meaningful conversation? I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps' One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time. We are having conversations in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania all year long, and you should be a part of it. Sign up now at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, the demand for a spot at America's top colleges is higher than ever. So why don't they increase supply?
Reputation matters.
And is an elite degree mainly a status symbol?
I think that's a gross mischaracterization of American higher education.
It's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and if you've just joined us, I've been speaking with Brenda Selden from Livingston Manor, New York. In the first half of the show, Brenda told us about growing up between two worlds, Forest Hills, Queens, and Buenos Aires, Argentina. And she also spoke about her husband, the late Ronnie Selden, who was a wonderful supporter of her work with the rehabilitation of animals and helped her to open her own animal rehab center in New York City. In the second half of the show, Brenda's going to talk about being an animal communicator. So let's get to it. Brenda, what exactly is an animal communicator?
An animal communicator is someone who telepathically communicates with animals, animals that are currently with us and animals that are in spirit as well.
Okay, so how do they do that?
It's mind-to-mind communication. We all have that ability. We're all interconnected. It's just that people just have chosen to step back away from this ability that we're all born with.
I've spoken to several psychics over the years, and it sounds like what you do is very similar to what they do, only you're basically communicating with animals and they're communicating with humans in the spirit world. What are the types of issues that you deal with? Typically.
So some of the issues that I typically deal with are behavioral, whether it's a dog that's destructive, likes to rip up your sofa's pillows, or a cat that likes to pee outside the litter box. I also deal with animals that are sick. People want to know how their animals are feeling, if the treatment that they're getting is working, is helping them to feel better, what would make them feel better. Also working with animals that are terminal. One of the hardest things for people is, of course, dealing with their dying pets. And so when they come to me while the pet is still alive, but in the process of passing away, I always tell my clients, you're going to be sad after they're gone, but you're not going to feel guilty because I'll have helped you understand what your pet would like in terms of going on their own or getting help to pass on, knowing when to do it. And that just takes a great burden off someone's shoulders to understand that they're working with their pet and not trying to guess what their pet would like.
Have you had an occasion where a pet communicated with you and said, I want to go now?
Absolutely. Pets are like people. There are places in the U.S. and in the world where people can make that choice. I've had enough. I want assistance and I want to be surrounded by my loved ones. So it's the same thing with animals. Some animals are like, get me out of here yesterday. I'm suffering a lot. I don't want to be here anymore. other animals tell me, I'm not feeling great, but I want to be with my loved ones until the end. And it's a choice. It's a choice they make. And if we can honor that, then we don't end up feeling the guilt that a lot of us do, just trying to guess, did I do right by the animal that I love so much? The other kind of issue that I get, people calling me wanting to speak to their pet that has passed on and wanting to be reassured that they're okay. Did they do enough? Did they do too much? Did they do it soon enough? Or did they wait too long? Those are very, very common worries that these people have when they come to me.
When we talked the first time, you said, and this is a quote, animals have free will. And you also said permanent change is voluntary. So what did you mean by those two things? Because I'm hearing that in what you just said.
Yeah. So the story that I had related to you was how a client in Eldridge, she had these two cute Scottish terriers, and one of them would run off to this busy road, either go close to it or even cross it. And she asked me to please ask him not to do that anymore. And of course, in my head, I'm thinking, wouldn't it be easier just to build a fence? But she hadn't so far. And I thought, let me just do this. And so I did. And I said, now, remember, it's about free will as well. And I can't guarantee. I can only guarantee that I asked him not to, and that I showed him the consequences, what could happen. So one of the things that people may be interested in knowing is that animals communicate in pictures and energies. By energies, I mean emotions, sadness, happiness. And so I showed her dog an image of crossing the road, getting hit by a car, being flattened, and his little spirit self flying up to the sky and saying, this is what could happen to you. This is where you should stay. And in this area, you'll be safe. And I showed him a picture of his yard and the woods behind it that his pet mommy was fine with him running around in. And she called me again some years later. It was close to 3 years later when she needed me again. And she said, ever since that time, you never ran into the road again. So it worked. And why did it work? Because he loved her and decided, okay, I don't mind. It was a personal choice to do that. Now, another dog might be like, no, I like this. I don't care. I'll take my chances. And that sounds a lot like people, doesn't it?
It does. And I just wanted to make sure the listener understands this. Spirits don't have mouths. They're energy, so they can't really talk to you. And of course, animals don't have language. Am I getting this right, Brenda?
Everybody has a different take of how all this works. I don't think there's one answer. I don't even think that really matters. I think what matters is, oh, this explanation makes sense to me. I can work with it. What I would say to that is that I don't speak dog and I don't speak cat, yet I can understand them. So I think there's just a universal form of translation through the energies. And also the information that I get will come in a variety of ways, will come as a picture in my mind. I will hear them. I will have physical sensations. And I'll also get the information I need, complete answer just popping into my head. And so it's a combination of all that.
It's a very sensory kind of thing.
It is definitely the five senses we have. We also have their version in the psychic manner.
I have a lot of friends who are therapists who work with children, and they often tell me that really more than working with the children, they're working with the parents. And I guess it's sort of the same thing working with animals that are pets. You have to also kind of help the parents of these pets to think a certain way, to behave a certain way with them. Is that not true?
Absolutely. Our pets, unlike wildlife, they live with us. They're more part of the human culture than they are of the wildlife culture. Mm. So if you notice, you never see a robin that looks neurotic. You never meet a squirrel that has OCD. So that's because they're wild. They're not part of human culture. And when our animals end up being influenced by us and by our energies and our ways. And so definitely working with the animals isn't just working with them, because the issue is also related to either the person who has them or the people who had them. Mm. Many animals, especially rescued animals, have gone through different circumstances, some of them very difficult. They may have been rehomed a lot or have gone through a shelter. And so they do carry some level of trauma. And so it's helping the person who's working with me to understand exactly what the animal needs, why they're reacting in a certain way, and what can help them. Because I can't just tell the animal, stop being afraid, stop barking and crying when your mom and dad leave the house to go to work. It's the same thing as telling a person or a child, just stop it. Mm-hmm. You have to heal it. You have to find the right way to help them. For instance, if an animal is destroying things in your house, could they be bored? Could they be angry? It could be any number of things. So finding that out, then you can work your way from there. And usually what I do is not just get to the root cause of the issue, but also create a plan of action to heal it.
Wow, that's fascinating. So I just have one more question for you. Now, we're talking basically about dogs and cats, but we live here in the country. And I was wondering if you ever work with an animal that we might find up here, like a cow.
I'd love to work with a cow. So cow people call me. But I have worked with horses. I have worked with a llama. And in terms of exotic pets, I've also worked with iguanas, fishes, turtles, parrots. I've also communicated with insects. 3 times I've gotten ants to just leave an apartment, 2 different apartments, and a home. And again, I asked them nicely. I would say to them, I don't want to make you leave your bodies, which is another word for killing. And I would show them what would happen. And I showed them that they could leave the house. And over the next few days, they disappeared and I didn't have that problem again.
Brenda, thank you so much for joining me today. This is fascinating. And I can assure you, I'm going to try very, very hard to never step on an ant again, ever.
Just remember, give it a shot to speak to them. You can say it out loud. You don't have to be an expert. Your intention should be one of, I really don't want to hurt you, but could you please leave the house so I don't have to? Mm-hmm. Give that a shot.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much, Brenda.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed my time with you.
This has been Catskill Character with today's guest, animal communicator Brenda Selden. You can call or text Brenda at 917-455-0473, or her email address is brenda@thehealingenergies.com. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. So tune in then to hear more fascinating stories of characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. This is Radio Catskill. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Former President Trump and Vice President Harris will meet in Philadelphia for their first presidential debate. It's the second presidential debate of this election season, taking place in a dramatically reconfigured race for the White House. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Join me for live special coverage of the ABC News presidential debate simulcast from NPR News.
Tuesday night starting at 9, here on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear from a totally made-up band called the Marco Polo Adventurers, plus Exotica music on the theremin. I'm Daryl Brogdon.